Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Mosermouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure. Thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses. You can hear these stories, including the Williams F1 team's planning director, Richard Jones, right now on your chosen podcast player. The charity work all year round to help develop research and raise awareness, and this October sees the return of the Brain Tumor Charity's most beloved community event, the Twilight Walk. You can join them remotely this autumn to cover 10 kilometres, 40 kilometres, 130 kilometres, or your very own distance to raise money and take strides towards a cure. Moving about is well known for boosting our well-being, and you can complete your walk bit by bit or all in one go as a team or by yourself, at home or indoors. So visit www.thetwilightwalk.com to sign up and start your fundraising challenge. A huge thank you for your support. If you can donate anything, you can do that through the motormouth.club website or through the Brain Tumor Charity direct. And together, we can help every single person affected by a brain tumor. It's season 9 and we're really excited to be teaming up with Roding Cars. Based in New Zealand but with a new HQ open in Donington Park in the UK, owning the Rodin FZ gives you the keys to experience a whole new level of driving performance. A supercar like no other, giving you the chance to feel pure driving pleasure. Designed for easy maintenance, you could own the F1 lifestyle and strive for that perfect lap time with the Rodin FZ. There's plenty of purchasing options including after-sale partners, where your Rodin FZ is looked after on and off track by an official Formula Racing team, storage and exclusive track access to Rodin's very own circuit in New Zealand. With Rodin and the Rodin FZ, you experience so much more than just owning an open-wheel high-performance supercar. For more information on Rodin and how you can get involved, visit rodin-cars.com.
Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Now today's guest hails from Cape Town in South Africa and I'm going to go straight into it, Harry, and test your South African knowledge. Honestly, this is an easy one. I know it's been challenging of late.
You say they're easy and my brain just doesn't work.
No, this, if you don't get this, it's a bit embarrassing. So, right. Although a popular tourist attraction for many, many years, which Cape Town landmark did not become a national park until 1998?
Why is that an easy one?
Think about it.
How on earth do you think? Yeah, that's common knowledge.
Think about Cape Town, and think about a postcard and what you normally see on a postcard of Cape Town.
You're not
come on.
All the postcards that I'm sending to Cape Town and back. It's a square.
Okay, but that
I don't know. The coast. I like the sea.
People are literally shouting at their car radios right now.
I've literally not got a Scooby. I haven't got a clue.
Table Mountain.
I would never got that.
Really?
Never. I don't know I hate to say it. I don't know my Cape Town geography.
You know what Table Mountain is though, right?
No.
Oh, sweet Lord. Oh, gives me a physical headache. So you're going to need to Google Table Mountain after this, or do it now. It's the most famous landmark in South Africa, basically.
Okay, it does look kind of cool.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
It's.
Well, I can only apologise to our contingent of listeners from Cape Town.
Yeah.
And to our guest.
Well, that mountain, 300 million years ago, was actually at sea level. And during an ice age, ice sheets flattened. It's all made of sandstone. They flattened the layers of sandstone, creating that sort of flat top that you can see now you've looked at it.
Yeah.
When the continents split and all those stresses and pressures built up in the Earth's crust, it's got granite in it, which gave it strength that kept it all together. The rock rose out of the ground and became a kilometre tall tabletop mountain that we recognise today. So there you go.
Oh, and that's why it's called Table. Do you see, if nothing, I learn something every time we do this. Yeah. If nothing else, I learn something new.
Yeah, you're going to be really good at pub quizzes.
Exactly.
Shall I introduce today's guest?
I think so. I'm a bit fearful now.
So today we're joined by Emma Walsh, the former star of Channel 4's Made in Chelsea, which she joined in Series 10. She's gone on to work in music, radio, on stage, singing and dancing, but we know her best for her YouTube and social media activity within cars and motorsport. She's even bagged herself a full race license and put herself to the test in the mini challenge at Brands Hatch and has interviewed the great and good of racing, including the likes of Sebastian Vettel. We're here to hear about her life, opinions, views, fears and more. Emma Walsh, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I just want to say I am horrified.
Yeah.
That you don't know Table Mountain. I dagger in the heart.
I can only apologise. And actually, I even have friends who are South African as well. And it is a bit of a shame. But my general knowledge is just terrible. It really is bad.
I mean, when you started with the question, I was like, oh, I don't even know the answer to this. And then,
it all became clear.
It's all easy when you know the question, isn't it? But let's move swiftly on. Are you joining us from the top of Table Mountain, Emma? Whereabouts?
No,
are you
not today, actually. Signal's not very good up there.
Whereabouts are you based at the moment, then? Where are you joining us from?
I'm actually based back in London now. I've moved back into London, yeah.
Oh, very nice. So, the weather is changeable. So, Cape Town, though. So, if we go back there, what is it like to grow up there? Tell us about, what life was like starting off, and were there early signs of your career and what was to be?
No, not now anyway. Everything's turned out very differently to what I had imagined as a kid. I grew up in a very musical family. My parents were a pop group in the UK, so...
Quite a well-known one.
Yeah, really. That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah, no, so lots of singing in the family. I started dancing when I was about 3 years old. I wanted to be a ballerina, and there was acting, and Cape Town was a beautiful place to grow up. I come from Somerset West, which is a really small town. Well, back in the day, I mean, it was really small. Obviously, it's built up a bit now, but yeah, small town, big dreams, that kind of story. And living by the sea was amazing. I spent most of my weekends riding my bike and rollerblading and swimming. And then during the week, I was full-time dancing, singing, piano lessons, sports.
Wow.
I came home at like 7 o'clock every night. I wanted to do everything.
Sounds like a film, like rollerblading by the coast and then off your dance lesson.
It was a great childhood. Not a lot of opportunities as a kid. From a small town back then, hence why I kind of moved on. But it was a really good childhood.
And when did the interest in cars come about? Because obviously at this point, your formative years, you're doing all the dancing and the singing. And at some point, an interest in cars shows itself. When did that happen?
I actually posted something yesterday. My dad sent me a picture of, I think I was 2 years old. He put me on the bonnet of a Suzuki, I think it was. And that's because somebody said, where did this love from cars come from? And my dad said, oh, I just kept putting you on a bonnet until you like cars.
Pushy parents.
Yeah. So, no, we used to watch Formula One together. I think I was the only one in the house that would watch it with them. And I just had this crazy urge to just want to learn how to race these cars like they did on track. It was a bizarre thing as a, you know, kid coming back from ballet, and I was just obsessed with learning how to learn, like to drive on track and just handle a car really well. And yeah, none of that kind of happened back at home. We had a go-kart track down the road, and I used to go to all the birthday parties. I think I went once, I got in the car, beat all the boys, and I was like, I really like this. And then just kept going back pretty much every kind of second week. And yeah, I loved it.
What, was there a danger that you may end up being, wanted to be a racing driver or just?
Oh, 100%. I had a full split personality. I was like pop star, racing driver. Like that was my two things. But, you know, my dad was like, you're going to have to choose one. But yeah, I mean, there was no racing when I was a kid back then anyway. So I was like, okay, well, I'll be a pop star.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Before we talk more about sort of the racing and the motorsport side, I think it's quite, because I think when I first met you as well, we both sort of talked about the idea that, because we both kind of had a similar, I mean, I'm no ballet dancer or anything, but both coming from kind of an acting, creative, singing kind of background. I could do a good box step every now and then. but where did that take you then? How far did you follow that? You know, the singing, the dancing, the acting, and what kind of stuff has come from that to begin with?
So I did ballet for about 18 years, and then along the way, I picked up, you know, modern dance and hip hop, and I felt like a lot of the work or shows that we had to do incorporated a lot of styles of dancing. So you had to learn how to do everything. I mean, you'd go to an audition and they'd be like, "Can you Spanish dance?" And you're like, "Yeah, I can."
Obviously.
Obviously. So I think I picked up everything along the way. I went to Singapore for a contract, for my first contract. I was 18. And then from there, just rolled on. I did a lot of corporates, music videos. I went on a cruise ship for 2 years as a singer-dancer. I had my own events company hiring dancers. I did Richard Branson's event the one year. That was
amazing
and also weird. I was just like, what's happening? I was so young, and I organized this whole event. And he was so great. And he personally came up and said, I just want to thank you so much for this event. It was like a white party for his staff for the airline. So everything was white, like white chocolate fountains and
that's amazing. It wasn't on one of his islands, the Virgin Islands, was it?
No, it was Johannesburg. Probably not as luxurious as one of the islands, yeah. But it was really good. So I managed all the dances there, and I actually sang at the event as well.
It's another member of the Motormouth band. This will be episode something like 98, 99. It might even be 100. I'm not sure yet. But out of those sort of 100 or so episodes, I'd say maybe a sixth of the people that we've interviewed have said they either play guitar or they sing or they dance or they do something unexpected. So I think
so
we could
start a band.
We could form a Motormouth band with Harry is, you know, with his RADA training can prance around at the front.
And Tim with his choir boy background, he'll be there at the front.
Yeah. So you're
amazing.
In. You've passed the audition already. So this is all setting you up quite nicely for what's to come. And so you're learning your trade, you're doing your dancing, and you're setting up businesses and being entrepreneurial. And then we find you on our TV screens in the UK. Made in Chelsea, which was, you know, a show that was absolutely massive at that point, certainly sort of around 2015-ish, I think it was. How on earth did this come about, first of all? And then let's dive into what it was like to actually be on it.
So just before that, I toured with Grease, the musical.
Oh, I love Grease.
Cool.
With the West End. So that's actually what brought me to London, because I came to audition for the West End show. So yeah, we did a year tour with that world tour, which was...
Wow.
Amazing, yeah.
Who did you play? Who were you in Greece?
What's that?
Who did you play in Greece?
Oh, I was an understudy for Sandy. And I came, because I was on the cruise ship, so I came in late. They'd actually already started rehearsals. And then they were looking for a swing, I think a month into the rehearsals, and I auditioned. And so I was a swing for everyone.
And that is hard. That is, I'd say that's arguably harder, because you've got to know everything, not just everything. Your own thing.
And at the drop of a hat, because you're, you know, somebody gets injured and you're like, you're on. And you're like, where's
my terrifying.
Part number five. So it was really hard. But from then I was in a girl group after that. We got put together for X Factor,
What?
All these things, people just mind. I know, people don't know. It's so weird to me because people know me from this kind of career now, and this career now is so new to me. I have this whole, the story. So girl band was the big one, and that didn't quite work out, which we can talk about another time. from there I met Ollie and Binky. I was working at Mahiki. I started working at nightclubs so that I could have my days free, and the money was really good. So I'd work three times a week, and then during the days I could kind of audition and do whatever else I needed to do. And I met them, we went away for the weekend, and they were like, you should come on the show. I'm like, absolutely not. This is not what I want to do.
Did you know about, were you aware of the show already?
I didn't really know the show. I mean, I knew them from coming to Mahiki, and they were like, oh, we're on this show. And I mean, I wasn't that familiar with it. I hadn't been here for that long, I don't think, at that time. But I hadn't watched it, that's for sure. And they kind of posted some pictures of the weekend of us away. And the producers phoned me. They were like, can you come on the show? I was like, not really what I want to do. But I'd just done this big track day at Silverstone, where I drove this Ferrari for the first time on track. And I put it on my Instagram. And at the time, obviously, my Instagram was nothing. And they were like, please, can you just come on and, you know, race cars or do your stunts or do, because I did stunts for movies as well. Back in the...
Of course you did.
You do.
Back in my previous life, And they were like, can you just come on and do some stuff? And my manager at the time was like, listen, what if you can, you know, sing and do a bit of stunts and drive a car on track? Maybe it's a good platform for you to showcase yourself. So, I mean, that wasn't what the show was for.
No.
I soon found out. But
as a profile thing, I mean, pretty amazing at that time. Question, and I know you would have been asked this a million times, but I've never heard an answer from someone that was actually in the show. How much of it is staged, and how much of it is just you just living your daily life?
It's not scripted at all. There's no scripts. I wouldn't say staged. I would say produced.
Yep.
Very well. Produced very well. You all get your own producer, and they kind of check in with you every day, and you do go about your daily kind of life. I guess when you're in the show, you would, I guess, hang out with the people you're filming with a little bit more than normal, I think, to be in the storyline. And then I think, I mean, I was pretty oblivious. I thought it was all going to be fun and games and have an amazing time. But I think people who've been on the show a long time know very much how to mould a storyline.
Yeah. Would you ever do Made in Chelsea or anything like that again if the opportunity came around?
I wouldn't say no. I think if I went back on the show at this stage, I would definitely know how to handle it anymore. I mean, you do sign a contract that you have to be honest, which is, you know, what you say to your producer, they have to take as the truth. Mm. So you are supposed to be honest. But I mean, I was caught in a flat out performance, and I was like, "What is going on here? I'm so confused."
There must be is there a pressure as well? Like if they're with you every day, or at least the days where you're involved, you know, is there a pressure on you to try and be like, well, I've got to do something interesting today. I've got to, you know, because there are surely days where, you know, there's maybe not a lot going on, and you're just like, oh God, well, I've got to make something out of nothing.
I think that's where the producing comes into play. I think they, you know, check in with you every day, go back to the other producers and directors, and they kind of mold a storyline out of what you're telling them. So if you've said, you know, I've had a fight with something, so on, and, or I feel like that I want to talk to this person today, then they'll kind of set it up and they'll be like, okay, well, if this was the scenario, what would happen? Or if this person walked in, what would you say? And they kind of get a feel for what the scene's going to be like before it happens. And when people bump into each other on the show, that actually is real. You don't know. And that's why everyone laughs or looks really awkward, because you don't always, you never know who you're going to bump into. And an extra tape mark on the floor and you're like, someone's going to
walk in. Why is that there? Yeah. Oh, that's so true. It's almost like you tell them everything and then they sort of work their magic in the background and just sort of facilitate it all.
But
sort of almost don't let you know. That's so interesting, isn't it? How it all, because I mean, I live in Essex land where the only way is Essex is filmed on every street corner going. And I'm convinced there's parts of that are scripted, but maybe it's the same thing as what it is made in Chelsea. It probably is. You know, it's how these shows had such huge success to begin with. But I suppose moving on from Made in Chelsea and everything you've done up to that point, you put all of that amazing experience from left, right and center into heading off into this new big bad world of YouTube, I suppose. Was that the next thing? How did the inspiration for setting that up come about? Was this the sort of the car automotive side sort of pushing its way through? Did you have a plan?
I had no plan, I can confirm. I think it was, you know, the one good thing to come out of the show. I mean, the show did nothing for my following or career. I wormed away very quietly and kind of hoped that everyone's just forgotten that I was on the show.
Oh, sorry about that.
Sorry. No, I'm joking. No, I don't mind at all. But I think the only good thing that came out of that show was my opening scene was racing this Ferrari around Brands Hatch, which was amazing. And somebody got in touch with me to sponsor my racing license. And because I'd spoken about it on the show, I always wanted to get it. I had no idea what I was going to do with this racing license, but I knew that, like, being a kid, it was a dream for me to do. And long story short, I was hanging around Shmi because I looked after him on this yacht in Monaco, and I just, long story short, he was doing his race license as well. So he said, you know, let's all just do it together, myself, him, and Seb Delaney.
Yep.
And they were like, you should film this. And I was like, why? What am I going to do with this video? And they were like, you should just start a channel because, you know, I don't know any other girls at the moment doing this and it could be good. And I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I filmed it with Shmi's old camera. Had the most amazing day, obviously passed, and then I was driving home and I was like, someone needs to edit this video.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it up. So I had to teach myself how to edit this. I mean, it's a shocking video. But yeah, someone had to, actually, do you know, Archie edited my first video.
Archie Hamilton.
Yeah. So I helped him start YouTube.
Okay.
And he was there that day and he actually edited my first video, but I had to learn how to edit from there on very badly on iMovie. So
no, you're doing yourself an injustice.
iMovie. Say that quietly.
I know. Yeah.
I still use iMovie. Don't tell anyone.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, Rodin Cars. Rodin are a bespoke formula-style supercar manufacturer based in New Zealand. With their vehicle offering, this is the only place where you can truly live the F1 lifestyle. With the easy to run, easy to maintain, and even easier to drive Rodin FZ, you can live the dream of hunting down those final tenths of lap time whilst being fully supported by the team at Rodin, who will provide you with after-sale care, storage options, exclusive use of their incredible track in New Zealand, and courtesy of Formula Racing Team Hi-Tech Grand Prix, will run, set up and maintain your vehicle on and off the track. The Rodin FZ is a vehicle like no other, perfect for any true car aficionado in search for that elite performance. To find out more, head to rodin-cars.com.
But that's it's interesting that it sounds like you were really well received by that community, because it, like Archie says, it is predominantly male orientated, isn't it? You know, you've got the likes of Shmi, TGE, Paul, Sam.
It was completely male dominated.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Yeah.
And do you feel like you were sort of welcomed with open arms by those guys and sort of brought into that community? Because you've featured in quite a few of their videos, haven't you?
Yeah, do you know what? Those guys were really good to me in the beginning. I mean, Shmi never put me on any of his videos. He's not like...
He's a corporate machine, though, you know.
Yeah, he's like... You know, but he invited me to a lot of events, was there for any kind of advice that I needed. Seb and I, he's like my little brother, so we used to film together quite a lot. And then Sam, Cynthia Glass and I get on really well, so we've done some stuff together as well. But yeah, we all went to Monaco together and they were really great. So it was a good times back then when everybody actually wanted to film together. Now everyone's
it's a funny industry now, because at that point everyone, like you say, was filming together and everyone's best buddies and it's all great and covering a lot of the same content, but it didn't matter because there's collaborations, like there's Monaco trips that you mentioned. It sort of feels like now it's got so big for a lot of them. Like Shmi is just on another planet in terms of his, you know, his channel has grown so much, but it feels like it's got so big now that there's obviously money involved and it's getting a little bit that it doesn't feel like they're quite as tight as they once were. I don't know whether that's fair.
That is true. All saying that, Sam and Paul are on a road trip at the moment. But yeah, I think everybody does their own thing now, really, I guess. It's so different.
Yeah, you know, it is a different world. Now, we're going to put you on the spot here. You've driven a number of different cars, all sorts of things. If you could only take three home with you, what would they be?
Do you know, if anyone is listening and knows me, I am so bad at choosing my favorite car. It's because I need to have driven them, I think. You know, it's so difficult to choose between Lamborghini, Ferrari and McLaren and Porsche, I would say.
What about the Mini? You're going to bin the Mini?
I'd bin the Mini, yeah. If I had a choice, definitely. In the bin.
Oh,
I know, poor little thing. No, it's a great car. I must say, I haven't driven the Huracan STO, but that's... I drove the Evo and everything else, Lamborghini, and as a whole experience, driving it and the sound and feel and everything, I do love a Lamborghini. I've driven quite a lot of McLarens. I loved the 600LT. Mm-hmm. But again, we got to drive it on track, so that's always a good experience. Ferrari Pista, mm-hmm. Love that car. None of these are built for comfort, by the way.
No.
I don't want to be driving as a daily. It's so difficult. Yeah, I would probably pick one of those three. Yeah. I wouldn't even go comfort or SUV. I wouldn't even do
it. Would you not?
No.
Not even one?
This is for the rest of your life, Emma.
Rest of your life.
You need your car that you go to the supermarket in. You know, your comfy...
You're not fitting.
I'd go the M2, probably.
There you go. Borderline, comfortable.
It's a little bit racy, comfortable. Yeah.
I would have to pick an SUV as one of them, just because I wouldn't fit in any other kind of supercar. No. It just wouldn't work.
You literally don't fit in any car.
What about a Lamborghini Urus then?
Yeah, 100%. That's what I'm having in yellow, because I feel like you have to have a Lamborghini in yellow. I just feel like it would probably be bold, but Larry. I just feel like that's the color I associate it with. There's somebody around where I live who has one. I don't know where he lives, but I see it parked every now and then. They're just beastly. I love it.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I was very lucky. We got to go to Lake Como and hoon these cars around, and it was a great car.
Yeah, and what a backdrop as well.
What about electric cars? Would you take an electric car in there?
I haven't. I had the Porsche Taycan for a campaign, and I really liked it. I think I would definitely have to drive a few more to see. I'm actually test driving one next week, so Yeah, I'm not against them. I just, I'm not too familiar with them.
I think
yeah.
also it's, we're not set up for them yet, are we? It's, you know, if you live in central London, it's not the most suitable place to have an electric car because you can't really
it's
plug it in.
It's getting there. It's a lot better than you think it is, I think.
Yeah, but you can't... Yeah,
not enough for me to buy one at the moment, I don't think.
We're looking, but we operate in a slightly different world to you, so I'm looking at a Skoda Enyaq. How depressing is that? So it's like a big electric SUV that's really tedious to drive, but very practical. Well,
I'm driving the Kia EV6 next week.
Ooh. Can you let me know how it goes?
I'll actually let you know how it goes. I've been inside it. It's a beautiful car, really, really nice looking, and better in person. I know that's weird, but yeah, it is. It's a good looking car, so I'll let you know.
Yeah, please, because I'm on the lookout. I currently drive another Skoda. I'm such an idiot.
Skoda for life.
I'm like a Skoda fanboy. So in automotive YouTube speak, my daily is a Skoda Kodiaq 7-seater, 2-litre, 190 PSI.
Oh, stop it.
Rocks it on the motorway. Yeah.
Let's can the Skoda chat for a minute as we head towards our sort of we've got a few sort of weird and random questions to ask you, Emma. But actually, just on the career side as well, first, you know, where do you see things going? You know, what is the dream, and you know, do you have any things you might have changed on the way to where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, the dream before was to be a pop star, kind of following the parents. Footsteps rapidly changed in the last couple of years. But I think something like Top Gear for me would be the dream. I think, you know, in corporates presenting crazy stunts, which I would be very up for, and driving cars. I think for me, those three things align quite well. So anything like a Top Gear show would be amazing.
And can you pinpoint, out of all the things you've done, your sort of proudest moment? Is there a point in life where you look back and think, yeah, that was a really big point for me that really stands out?
Yeah, I think I have a few, actually. I've been very fortunate to experience quite a few things. I think Greece was definitely a big standout moment for me, touring, you know, with the West End as somebody who came from a little town in Somerset West was a big thing for me. Being in the girl band in the beginning was supposed to be huge. It didn't work out very well. But
just what was it called?
We were called Chicks.
Chicks.
But Chicks with two. It was like two X's.
Oh,
very cool.
Very cool.
It was put. We were put together for X Factor, and there was a whole scandal going on, and you know Simon Cowell. It was a whole thing. So you know we were going to be the band that you know changed into like a really cool Chicks band. So we were called like Melody Lane, something really lame before.
Melody Lane.
And yeah, we were supposed to go touring with the Saturdays, and like we had all these contracts and
wow.
Yeah, it was a huge moment, and I was like, wow, my life's gonna change. And yeah, that fell apart quite quickly. But I think the big moment for me recently was being on Top Gear, being asked to be a part of that Top Gear or show or episode or online, whatever it was, but just standing there doing, you know, the lap time with the Stig, and like, I was just, that's the kind of stuff I watched when I was a kid with my dad. Yeah. And, you know, I took him to all the live shows, and that was a really proud moment for me, I think, just coming from such a small town. And yeah, that was a big wow moment for me, I would say.
Yeah, that's
I don't think
cool.
anybody's got the same career path as you. I don't think anybody could match that. It's
amazing.
It's amazing.
It is. I'm slightly taken aback by it because I wasn't expecting it. Because I sort of, as probably most people in this country that follow cars, know you from YouTube. That's, you know, that. And, you know, to be honest, because I watched a bit of Made in Chelsea back in the day, not a great deal. But I've known you as a YouTuber, so it's funny that you've done all this other stuff. And I was going to ask you, one of the questions that we had lined up was, what's your biggest talent that perhaps no one knows about? But it sounds like you've done so much. But is there anything that really stands out for you that you think, you know, what is your biggest talent, I suppose?
Do you know... Oh, I mean, I did singing, dancing, acting. I was a really good dancer. I feel very untalented now, and I think that's my problem at the moment. Constantly trying to feel like I'm a little bit more talented than I feel at the moment. It's weird because You know, I'd wake up every day. I knew what I was doing, even if I wasn't in a job. I knew where to audition or what to do or who to call. Or, you know, I'd go in and I'd learn. I'd pick up choreography. I think that's probably my biggest talent, is picking up stuff quite quickly.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's kind of script reading or choreography or whatever it is. I'm quite good at picking stuff up quite quickly, watching something and then doing it. And I get in a race car with a driver and I say, do the track first, you go first, and I watch. And then I learn like that. So that's pretty good. But yeah, I often wake up and I'm like, I don't know how to be talented anymore.
Oh no.
It's a weird place to be when you've done something your whole life and then it kind of changes over. Yeah.
It's what I think. Sorry, Harry. I was just going to say, what is, I mean, you've got your YouTube. What is the dream for you? Like, what do you want to do next? Because I know I watched, I've watched your YouTube channel quite a lot. You're very open in it. You know, you've had your ups and downs. You've spent some time in South Africa of late, which sounds like it was a great thing for you to do. But where are you right now? I mean, where's the head at? What are you thinking is the path forward?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've kind of just, I'm still figuring my way out. I mean, people know, like you say, people know me from YouTube and this world, but I mean, really, I'm just still figuring it out. Like, it's so new for me and coming from something that I did for so long, I'm still just kind of trying to, you know, pave the path, if you want to say it like that. And I'm still figuring out what this industry is about, you know, being a girl in this man's world, like you say, and just trying to figure things out. I think I've put my YouTube channel into hibernation because I keep coming back. I'm back. But I just wasn't feeling like I was putting out anything of interest, or, you know, I wasn't going to do the daily vlogs because I felt like I wasn't doing anything interesting, and I didn't feel like people would just want to watch random things. They do, which is weird, which is good. But I just kind of put it on the back burner. I think I just needed to focus. The last 2 years have actually been quite difficult, I think, for a lot of people. You know, I got stuck in South Africa. I was supposed to be there for a month or two. I ended up being there for 7. So that kind of messed the head up a little bit. And yeah, just coming back to London was a big step. So I just thought I'd put everything on the back burner, really focus on just, you know, getting things more lined up. And presenting, I think, is my focus. And yeah, my priorities have changed a little bit in terms of YouTube. So I'm just waiting to you know, come back on YouTube. And I think, I think presenting now for me, I'd love to be doing TV, anything like that. Yeah,
interesting stuff. I mean, it has been a changing time, hasn't it? And I think it's made a lot of people evaluate what they're doing with their lives, you know, in all sorts of industries. But one thing I am keen to know about is your motorsport interest. So you followed F1 when you were a kid. Are you still following it now? Are you keeping up with the F1 season this year?
Yeah, I absolutely love F1. It's like my favourite thing ever,
So,
it's so good at the moment.
How do you think this year is going to pan out? What's your prediction?
Oh, it's so close, isn't it? I mean, Lewis is such a great guy. He's such a talent. And I just think it's so exciting for the sport that, you know, Max has got such a shot to win this as well. So I think it's keeping everyone on their toes in the final couple of races. I don't know who's going to take it. It's so close.
I don't.
Like, I actually don't know.
No.
It's really, really close. I am spurring on the McLaren boys, though. Daniel Ricciardo is definitely my favourite driver. And I think Lando is doing so well.
Heartbreaking last time out, wasn't it?
Honestly. Absolutely. And I think the whole nation felt that one. But I do think that was almost better for him in his career than it would have been to win at the time. And I think he's got so much time coming up to win. And I think he's definitely going to be a world champion one day soon.
Yeah, it's, you know what's great about F1, I think, actually, these days? Obviously, this year the racing has been much better than it has been in the last few years.
Yeah.
But also, I think because we've got all these like young drivers coming in now who are all, you know, they're all on Twitch, they're all really open. That added together with like F1 being more digital and giving people more access, I think it's just changed how people watch. And plus, you know, Netflix, Drive to Survive. It's amazing how much F1 has changed in the last 5 years, I think, really. And just how much more accessible, entertaining, and just like a better place, it seems. You know, you've got Lando Norris on this morning opening up about his mental health and all these kind of things. It's just fantastic, I think. You don't get that in many other sports.
And fair play to Liberty Media, because, you know, when they came in, everyone was like, yeah, whatever, you know, nothing's changed, same old, same old. And when you do look at it like that and look back at how it was 5 years ago, it's completely different. Mm. Plus, it's all shaping up to be mega in the next few years, because, you know, when you've got like Lando Norris and McLaren coming back, who knows what's going to happen next year with all the regulation changes, it'll probably throw a right spanner in the works. But at the moment, with Lando doing so well, George Russell clearly going to be racing for one of the top teams. We're going to have two British drivers battling it out at the front who are pals. And then you've got the likes of Leclerc and all these other amazing talents. It's going to, next year, I can't wait for. I really can't wait.
Really, honestly, it has changed so much. And I think since I started in this kind of world, there was always, you know, my dream was to do something with Formula One. You know, people follow people, and Drive to Survive has changed everything. And it's been great because, you know, they are these, people forget they are these elite sportsmen. They are like the best of the best, top of their game. You know, it's so quick to be like, oh, well, you know, he should have done this or should have done that, or he's rubbish. And, you know, they're top 10 drivers. And I think Drive to Survive really opened up that side of their personalities and what happens in the team and how difficult it actually is to, you know, to be a Formula One driver. And I think it's so great.
Yeah. There's a lot of good storylines, isn't there? What do you make of Marzipan? Because he's had so much crap, probably rightly, over the course of the season so far, and for his antics at the beginning of the season. He's doing some PR, I don't know whether I buy it or not. He's doing some PR activity at the moment that's trying to project him in a certain light. What do you make of a driver like him coming into the sport?
What's PR's there for a reason, right?
to change
things around, to make something bad something good. I think he's just, I think he's been told to, you know, up his game a little bit on the media side, and he's doing what he can. It's so difficult. I mean, you look at somebody like Raikkonen as well. Like, he didn't care about, so he was there to drive, and it actually made it quite interesting to watch, and he stuck with it his whole career. He never changed, really. I mean, I think he started a social media platform, unsure if he actually managed that, but it must be so difficult being a driver. Like, you're fully focused, you're working all the time for this goal to win, and, you know, you've got this on-track rivalry, and then off-track you're just constantly swarmed by cameras and phones, and now with phones and social media, you can't do anything without getting caught. You have to be on kind of best behavior all the time. So I do feel for them. It must be tough.
Yeah, and they're only human at the end of the day, you know. And we had Nico Rosberg on here a few months ago, and even he was saying, even at the height of his success, when he was literally world championship year, he felt insecure, didn't feel confident in his abilities, was insecure when he was on camera. And you don't see that, but they are only human at the end of the day. I suppose the trouble is people see, you know, them driving around in supercars and earning a lot of money, and I think the sympathy tends to go out the window a little bit. But like you say, at the end of the day, they're just normal people who are trying to make their way in life.
Well, that's why I think the more open they are, the better, and it gives, you know, unfortunately humans are naturally judgmental, and it's shocking,
especially in this country.
I don't, you know, they're only seen in their best form on TV, and that's why I think Drive to Survive has been good, and also the drivers doing their own social media, Lando, and, you know, coming on a show and talking about your mental health. People go, oh, you know, they're on a pedestal, and then they realize, you know, actually these guys are human as well, and, you know, they are normal at the end of the day.
I think that's where the age thing comes in as well, because people forget that these kids—they're not kids, obviously. They are adults, but
they're young, aren't they?
Between 19 and 24, you know, they're still very young. Obviously, they are incredibly mature for the places where they're at. But, you know, if you're 22, 19, suddenly thrown into this Formula One world where the pressures suddenly ramp up, you know, it's going to be a tough one to deal with, regardless of your background and where you come from and how good you are. You know, so people very easily forget that, I think, when looking at Formula One. But Emma, look, we've got a final three questions to ask you, which we ask to all of our guests, so we just like to see what comes out differently. Emma, we've got our final three brought to you by Rodin Cars, so I'll kick things off. Our first one to you: What's got you excited at this very moment in time?
I would say actually moving back to London and all the possibilities that could arise. I'm quite excited to be back in the UK and settle back into London.
Very good. You've travelled extensively. What's been your favourite destination?
That's really hard. Probably south of France, actually, because it's an accumulation of Monaco, Formula One, rosé, great food, great roads, and good weather in the summer.
But that all-important rosé is beautiful there as well. Amazing. Okay, final one for you. What are you scared of?
I'll keep it light. Spiders, actually. Yeah. I'm not scared of a lot. Like I'll jump off things and drive things fast. And yeah, spiders.
Well, I imagine growing up in South Africa, there's probably a few creepy crawlies around there, right?
Horrid. And you know, my dad used to catch them and run around the house with us. They would be like in the Tupperware. I'm like, no wonder I'm so petrified.
That is horrific. I can't do spiders. Terrible.
Not a fan at all.
Well, look. I know, it's terrible. Well, look, Emma, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for giving up your time. It's been brilliant to find all about you. Obviously, your YouTube and automotive career, but all the other stuff as well, from Made in Chelsea, the pop group, singing, acting, dancing. It's been so amazing to get to know you a little bit better. And I hope people make sure to go and follow you, Miss Emma Walsh, on all the socials. But from us, Emma, thank you so much for joining us on the Motormouth podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out Rodin Cars. Forget a one-off experience. With Rodin and the Rodin FZ, you can become and live the life of an elite performance driver. With your very own Rodin FZ, you'll be able to drive a truly remarkable supercar. Hunt down lap time and search for ultimate performance. A solo cockpit, but never alone. With Rodin's incredible after-sale partnership, you'll be looked after on and off track with an official Formula Racing team running and maintaining your vehicle. And as an exclusive owner of a Rodin car, you'll get exclusive access to their circuit in New Zealand. So, what are you waiting for? To find out how you can own the F1 lifestyle, find the perfect racing line, enjoy the thrill of a roaring engine, and experience the purity of driving, visit rodin-cars.com. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at @Motormouth_, Instagram at @Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.